I'm on the road to recovery, step by step. There are tears on my pillow that won't dry on their own. Beyond my ears, I've no sorrow, but today I don't walk alone.
Welcome to the Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group's Thursday Night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. Let's have Spencer with our joke.
Hey, Spencer, alcoholic joke teller. And I got another great one from Drunk as a Skunk, 150-plus jokes for beer lovers, wine connoisseurs, and raging alcoholics. You know, one of the great things about getting sober is that you get to make life choices that you never would have made. So I have big news. I am an organ donor now.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure all they're going to use my liver for is after photos.
I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name is Brandon. Thanks for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our two-minute meditation, so please take a moment to get situated. Please turn off all devices that make noise that might slash will distract others. Take this time to get connected to God and let the craziness of the day drift away, and ask God to help you stay focused on the step study tonight. Is everybody ready?
Yeah.
If so, let's start the meditation.
Thank you.
And now we're going to do the fog light prayer. It's on both screens. God, let your love shine through me like a fog light, so those who are lost can find your love through me. There is a solution from the Big Book, page 17. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. I have asked Janet to read Appendix 2, Spiritual Experience. We read this because it is the main purpose of the 12 steps and to have one. So it's kind of important to know which one is.
I'm Jana, I'm an alcoholic. Spiritual Experience. The terms spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which upon careful reading shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, sorry, my heart's Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource, which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. Herbert Spencer.
All right, please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting back up and sitting back down. This is a tech-free meeting, so set your phones to airplane/meeting mode or just turn them off. And then we have Peter tonight for his fifth session. Please help me welcome up Peter.
My name is Peter, recovered alcoholic. Grateful to be alive and sober and part of a sacred place called Alcoholics Anonymous. Before we get going, I just want to shout out, we have some friends visiting from Ohio, so welcome to South Florida. The temperature's pretty cool right now, so you'll enjoy it out there. It's cooled down a little bit. I love when people say it's a dry heat. I don't understand what that means. June 23rd, 1988 is when God separated me from alcohol, and I'm grateful to be a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Grateful for sobriety. Speaking with someone today, not a sponsee, but he calls now and again, and we're talking about the early days in recovery, and you know, some of the things we're grateful for. And there's many things I could punch holes at and things I can point to and say, well, it's not this way and this way. This should be here and that should be there. And I should have arrived by now. And that's just self-manifesting when it gets circumstances around. The thing about self, it needs circumstances. It needs a narrative. It needs drama. And that needs me. And but if I get real quiet and just take a look at the life God has given me, I'm really, really just super grateful to be in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous and, quite frankly, get to do the things I get to do in AA. Not more than anyone here, certainly not, but just the path God has put me on and the life he's given me. I've shared this a bunch of times. I do have a sponsor. He's out of St. Paul, Minnesota. His name is Bob Azans. I'm grateful for the lessons he continues to give me. I've been blessed, quite frankly, since I got in here in 1988. Albeit my first 6 months, I was Looney Tunes like a lot of us. You know, going from meeting to meeting to meeting and riding the wave, you know, which crashes every once in a while, and I break a shoelace, and the world's going to end, and you have to sign up with me, because if I have drama, you must get involved in my drama. And if you don't have drama, I don't have drama, we'll get together, invent some drama. And then I'm really happy and elated, and I thought I was spiritual because I'm happy and elated. And that can happen in recovery with double digits. You know, if you wake up and you just feel like everything feels really good, and I give myself a star thinking I'm really spiritual, it's just a mood swing. You know, the endorphins are going nuts for some reason. Because I'll wake up the next day and I'm kind of lethargic. Doesn't mean I'm less spiritual. I did the same exact thing I'm doing today as I did yesterday. It's just a mood swing. But I got attached to that in early recovery. And it was December 22nd, 1988. I'm looking to get drunk, high, or both. Because I couldn't take the sober thing anymore. I'm going to a lot of meetings. I'm living in Minnesota at the time. I'm going to meetings. I'm meeting folks. Before cell phones, we used to get phone numbers, write them on napkins, matchbook covers, and I don't know what to do with them. You know, I'm embarrassed to call someone. Those old landlines became like 10 tons to pick it up. And I mean, I remember the rotary dial ones too. I mean, that's a lot of work to call someone to save my life. I think I'll wait 90 days. And and really, by God's grace, I didn't get drunk on that day. And what I've come to learn, because we live life forward and understand it backwards, is that getting grace, people out there have God's grace. It's not like we own it. It's an unearned gift. We all know that. But God's grace and spiritual fitness aren't the same. And I can equate grace with fitness, and I'm in for a rude awakening. So what was keeping me sober for those first 6 months was God's grace, his mercy. But I was still running on me. I was still running on self-reliance. Self was in full bloom. And self leads the way. And I'm attached to everything the self told me to do, which quite frankly is all up in the head. And my mind was my God. My mind saw, heard, spoke, acted, and I followed. And I was attached to it. And by God's grace, I didn't get drunk that day. And I hung in there. You know, how you doing? Hanging in there. What misery to hang in there. Hanging in a day at a time. you know, another day at a time, and oh my God Almighty, when's it going to stop? Don't leave till a miracle happens, and I'm going to meetings. Where's this miracle? You know, old timer says it's happened, you're here, stop looking. But I'm going to meet, the miracle happened here, the miracle happened there. She's cute, maybe a miracle happened there, I don't know what to do. And I was finally brought home, and it was survival. And when I was given my first sponsor, my world changed. And not just recovery, because life and recovery, you know, we sometimes say it's a bridge back to life. I don't understand what that means, because that life I don't want to bridge to anymore. But I had this new life, this rebirth, this regeneration, this whole new thing. And I got to look at my life in general with new eyes. And I realized I was the problem. I paid so much attention to not drinking and staying away from a drink, which sounds good. But after a while, I have to learn how to stay away from me, because I'm the problem. And I got to see that. And I saw a greater need to get right with this God of my understanding. It didn't have to be my parents or my grandparents or, you know, anyone else's, quite frankly, including AA. It was a God of my understanding, because this was going to be a lifelong journey. I had to be comfortable with this God, even though he might make me uncomfortable every once in a while and shake it up to wake it up, to reveal new things to me. So I had a God of my understanding, and you know what it was? It was you. It was a group of drunks for good early direction. You were tangible. I can hear you at a meeting. I can shake your hand. I can get a hug. We can talk outside. And the old timers, I bless their hearts, they would always sit in the back. And they would call you over to sit down with them. And when they got to know your name, I was gold. It was, hey, kid, to hey, Pete. And I would listen to what they would tell me to do purely out of desperation. It's not like I was some great student in AA. I just don't want the old life back anymore. So here's Joe with 30 or 40 years at the time telling me, go home and pray tonight and thank God for another day. Okay, I'm going to do that. I'm not negotiating. And I started to fall in love with the effect produced by God the way I fell in love with the effect produced by booze. But my first sponsor was just a wonderful guy. He was roughneck, a lot of edges. Wasn't well received back in my neighborhood in Brooklyn, because he walked around with a book and he came out of the book. And usually every other word out of his mouth was something to do with God. And it was a lot of put the plug in the juggers, don't drink and go to meetings and that kind of thing. Bless their hearts. But he came from a different place. He had a different experience. And he was willing to pass that on. I'm grateful God put him in my life. I didn't pick a sponsor. Often new guys come up to me and says, I need to find a sponsor. Who should I ask? I says, God, my picker is broken. I don't pick good people. My track record proves that. So now I'm going to depend on me to pick someone who's going to lead me to the promised land. No good. We'll wind up in a crack house. I never smoked crack in my life. I don't know why I said that. Half the room went, what do you mean you never smoke crack? So I prayed. God, I need a sponsor. Became God, I need a teacher. And this guy was put in my path. And we began a journey out of our beautiful big book. And what I did after about a year or two with this book was worship the book, worship the steps, worship the 12 and 12, worship the methodology. And I got a little evangelical. It was part of my journey. I don't regret any of it, by the way. But I found out that this is the treasure map. This is the menu. And if I go to a restaurant, I can study the menu and I can tell you everything that's on the menu. I even know what the specials are. But if I don't order, eat, I'll go home hungry. And so this was a pat to God. I do the steps not to keep me sober. I do the steps experience this power, which is keep me sober all along. This was a menu. And little by slowly, you start to wake up and have a different point of view on things. And I love the book. I love the methodology. I love mechanics. I still do. But I'm really clear they're a path. And that has made me open to a lot of other information that's out there that's not even AA approved. I think I said a few weeks ago, I have a handful of AAs that I listen to. Half of those guys have passed on. A few are still alive. But everything else that I read and study is all coming from, we'll call them spiritual teachers out there. And even religious folks, they speak to my soul. It resonates deeply. I learn, I awaken because of it. And that's where God has me right now. And I had this sponsor for a number of years, and I found another sponsor. And I was just talking about this last night, this gentleman from Texas. And when I didn't think it could get any better, this guy kind of lit me up. And I've said this from a million podiums, for me, my greatest teacher. And not that my other sponsors weren't competent. Wonderful, wonderful man. God has put incredible giants in my life. But this one guy from Texas was just, he was it. He was everything. I'd go over a cliff for him. He was that good and that caring. And his commitment to God was just, it made a lot of folks blush. It was so good. I heard a lot of people quoting and quoting and talking about God with their lips, but living as if there wasn't a God. And he talked and walked that this message, and I just fell in love with this guy. He's a great teacher. And he passed on, and you know, you find somebody else. And I began a journey over and over and over. I've been through the steps many, many times. And I've learned. There's always a new wrinkle. There's, when I say I know everything, I stop learning. So there's always something new to learn, something new to experience. And we take a look even at step one. How does step one meet us with 20 years sober? How does step one meet me with 30 years sober? How does step one meet me with 5 years sober? I've been down this road a million times. I sponsor a whole bunch of people. Step one will meet me where I am, because this book will meet me where I am all the time. And not that I'm going to go drink tonight, but what's my current unmanageability? What am I denying? What am I in denial about right now? What am I minimizing, justifying, rationalizing, tucking away? Don't want to look at it. We're not going to go there. But I know it's a thorn in my side. But my ego don't want to look at it. What am I in denial about? You know, what's my commitment to God? How often do I speak about God at an AA meeting, even though it may not be popular in some places? Might even annoy some people with the new world that's going on out there. Tough. Because if I stop talking what I believe in, I'll stop believing in it. Yeah? Same thing with this big book. I've caught holy hell at some meetings. Not down here. You guys have been great to me since I arrived. But back up north, I'd walk in with a book. Half the room would walk out. I'm still here. I don't know where they are. And I'm not about shoving this book down anyone's throat. It's just my experience. Hey, guys, I'm not a model nor am I an example of an AA member. I'm just here to tell my story. A spoke and a huge wheel. I like it that way. But if you come to me and ask me, what do I do? I'm stuck. I'm going to tell you. And it may not be warm and fuzzy. Because one of the things I respected from all my sponsors, they gave it to me. And it wasn't warm and fuzzy all the time. With love. And I remember Mark telling me, sometimes you're going to have to tell someone something that hurts you to say and you know it's going to hurt them to hear, but who else is going to do it? It's for fun and for free. I have to pay about $150 for a therapist to tell me that. Or I need a really good insurance policy to go into a treatment center. Maybe they'll tell me that. This, we sit down one drunk to another. That's the sacredness of it, for fun and for free. And we'll ante up. Give each other spiritual consent. And I learned, as I talked about a few weeks ago, the depths of step one, the depths of alcoholism, how deep those roots are. My God. You know? And my alcoholism doesn't come in a bottle of whiskey. For me, I speak for myself. I'm not just to put the plug in a jug and kind of motor along. Because for me, the plug never stayed in the jug. It's coming out. And I was the problem. You know, in fact, when we look at page 62, this is my problem. I'm not drinking, and it's telling me selfishness and self-centeredness, the root of my troubles. I'm driven. When I'm driven, there's really no choice. I'm just taken. You know, people who are driven for success, they get successful. But they're divorced. The kids don't even know who they are. They've stepped over people, maybe broke some laws. People are driven for fame, you know. Their lives are a mess. They're in the spotlight. They're making millions and millions of dollars. Some of them land in here. Most of them, their lives are a wreck because they're driven. They can't see anything else but that. I'm driven by 100 forms of fear. And sometimes when we're in fear, and even currently, I don't even know I'm in fear. I just know it's rumbling a lot. I'm feeling the effects of it. I'm not okay. I'm pretending to be okay. I'm just not okay. But I don't know what the heck is going on with me. It's fear, the evil and corroding threat. It is at the core, is at the center of all my problems. What's behind resentment is fear. And there's one place fear originates, is up in the head, me. It says fear ought to be classed with stealing. Stealing is a choice. It's a conscious choice. I think I'll take that. I can go to God or stay with this fear thing. I'm driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. I step on the toes of my fellows and I retaliate. This is all column 1, 2, 3, and 4, by the way. Sometimes they hurt us seemingly without provocation, but I made a decision based on me, which put me in a position to be hurt. It's all about me. Perceptions of a situation usually cause me pain and suffering. Not always the reality of it. It's like one person could watch a program and say, oh my God, what a great movie. And the other person says the worst thing I ever saw. It's perceptions. I like this speaker. I don't like that speaker. And I'm going through life with glasses that are smudged and I'm trying to see truth. And I need to get me out of the way. So our third step here was vital, but I'm not gonna do two, I'm not gonna do three, and if I do them, it's gonna be checking boxes. I'm not gonna really make a commitment to this pointer in two and this decision in three and four through nine. If I am not absolutely convinced that me running my life gets me drunk and to drink is to die. Because if I'm still negotiating on that, I'll check boxes with two, tell the sponsor, I believe in the Lord, I'll turn everything over. And as soon as he turns his back, I'm running the show again. And I don't complete a fourth step. I go to a sponsor, just write your autobiography, make it warm and fuzzy, we'll get out of here quick. That's the sponsor I want. I'm not looking to get down to causes and conditions. I don't want that because I'm not ready to be sober. So I had to be convinced that me running the show, I get drunk, when I drink, I die. And that's not a conclusion of the mind, and it has never been for me. Sometimes we'll hear folks, and this is just their way of doing it, that steps 1, 2, and 3 are conclusions of the mind. I don't understand that. My mind concludes a double vodka would fix all of this right now. We don't need a fourth step. I'll get into a new relationship. That's what I need. I need someone in my life, so I'll hop in bed and have a new relationship with someone. Then he or she turns into Satan. I'm looking for someone else. Or I need a new job. I need a career change. And I do all the... I'm trying to remedy the external world rather than going in here and fix what's wrong with me. I'm trying to fix the outside stuff. Rather than get down to cause and conditions. That's the ego, what the ego demands. Because if I go in and do some work with the sponsor, the ego is going to start to crash and burn. It doesn't want that. It's all soul work we get to do here. So I make this decision in step 3 with my sponsor. And the first time I did a third step, I thought it was about alcohol. If I do this, I won't drink anymore. I didn't understand it had to do with my whole life. My thinking and my actions. I didn't know the depths of step 3. I'm clueless, but teachable. That's a good place to be. Because sometimes we get folks in here got all the answers and they're not teachable. I'm just full of desperation. Okay, sponsor, I'll do it. Okay, third step, great. It was interesting, my first third step. I went to this guy, Tony. Everyone in Brooklyn's named Tony, by the way, but his name was Tony. And I went out. He was a rough character, you know. And I went up to his house to do a third step that day. And I walked in, and the lights were dim, and he had a lot of candles going on. And I said, okay, what's going on here? And we went into his living room, and we got on our knees, and he was holding my hands. I said, okay, time out. And... he closed his eyes. I kept one eye open through the whole process just in case. I make fun of it. It was actually sacred. And he led me through the third step because I didn't know what I was doing. I studied the third step. I thought I had it memorized. Game on. I forgot it. I'm like, God, what do I do? And he said it for me, and I basically followed him. I look back on that now, and I sponsor a lot of guys like that. It's the innocent climb. He knew I was petrified. He knew I was stumbling along because I was so nervous. And also nervous being that close proximity to another man holding hands. I was uncomfortable. But he was okay with all that. He was free. And he was teaching a student. And when we got up off the floor, we went to the table and he sat down and he showed me the book where it says, next. He said, that means now. You don't have to work a good step. The way we're going to work a good step is through 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And he showed me instructions for step 4. There was some heavy lifting here. And by then I had my first, I was living in this apartment. And I'll never forget it. I had a bookshelf for a desk. I took out a shelf. And it was on the floor. And I had a desk. It's in my apartment right now. That thing's older than, I don't know, it's forever, but I got it. And I had this broken chair. It was a swivel chair. And if you turn wrong, you'd float right down the boulevard. It just kept going. It was really, and I'm wobbling. And I had this old lamp, and I set it up there. And my sponsor said, if you stay home and don't go to a meeting tonight and write a 4th step, you'll be okay. So stay home and write. And so I had to learn to pray before I write. And I remember writing this prayer. My sponsor told me across the top of the page, and it went like this. Thank you, God, for allowing me to be searching, fearless, and moral. Because on my own, I'm not going to be searching, fearless, and moral. On my own, I'm going to get tired. I'm going to putter right out. I'll justify and minimize. I know there's a 5th step behind this. I know they say pay attention. I know there's a 5th step coming. And I know he's going to hear this, so we're not going to write about this. That's what my head does. And what begins to happen as I'm praying and I start to write, I would pray, get quiet, and thank you, God, for allowing me to be searching, fearless, and moral, pick up the pen, and stuff starts to happen. And suddenly I'm finding endurance, stamina. I'm going an hour here writing. And I'm writing about things that I would, where's this coming from? I forgot about this. Because what's happening is I'm not writing the 4th. I mean, the pen's in my hand. It looks like I'm writing, but I'm not. Spirit is. I asked him to help me. He's, I gotcha. We're going to get you free. But some of the things that came out in step 4 weren't all wonderful. Some of the things I wrote about, I was pushing the pen through the notepad because I still hated these people. And some of the things I wrote about were really painful. I'm uncomfortable putting this on paper. And I got into that place where I wasn't thinking about step 5. It was just coming. Just purging of stuff. Going back through our lives. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. They don't care what you write it on, what your grammar's like, what your penmanship. They don't care. Just be thorough and honest. How can I be thorough and honest? I'm a liar, cheat, and a thief. I'm a drunk. I got to call on him to do that. God gave us this. He understands the sacredness of it. Yeah? My alcoholism doesn't come in a bottle of whiskey. It comes right here, up in the head, and this had to get out of the way. And little by slowly, self is dying. And I start to write about some things. I remember writing about my mom and how resentful I was that she committed suicide. How could a woman do that to her children? That was way underneath. On the outside, she said, yeah, my mom committed suicide. Isn't that terrible? The poor woman was sick. Underneath, that was seething. How could she just abandon us like that? What was she thinking? And that all came out in step 4, and I realized I'm like her and she was like me because I tried to check out too. Mental health issues and alcoholism, that's what we do. That's where she was brought to. And suddenly I had so much empathy and sadness because I'm thinking about this woman who's 34 years old, wants to end her life with 3 boys. What a horrible place to be. How could I be angry with that? I remember writing about my dad. I said he and I never got along. My dad was like a tough guy, neighborhood, gangster type of guy. Playing sports was for sissies. Going to school, enough. Get a job. Go beat people up. Do something good with your life. I was into music. I wanted long hair and bell bottoms and hippie beads. It was the 60s. My dad was convinced he picked up the wrong baby at the hospital. You know, hippies, all hippies were communists, according to Archie Bunker, my dad, you know. I remember wanted to go to Woodstock. I was 10 years old. My dad thought I was nuts. You know, I was too young, obviously. My dad, what's wrong with us? What's wrong with this kid? But I was angry with him, really angry with him. You know, Little League Baseball, all the fathers were there. My dad was out doing his thing. You know, PTA meetings, my dad, that's for women to go to, not men. It was very old school, and I grew up very, very resentful. Then I did a fourth step, and I shared it in step five, and I got a new pair of glasses. And I start to understand how my dad grew up in extreme poverty, depression, the war. And he went to the streets to earn money. And those were his codes for living. And he stuck by them. The way we have a code to live in here. We have a design for living that works. For him, that worked. How could I be angry with that? We just saw the world through two different eyes. And I start to look at all the wonderful things he was doing. I never wanted for anything as a kid. Had toys under the Christmas tree. Had new clothes to go to school with. There was always food on the table. I just didn't like the way the messenger delivered the message. I had to grow up a little bit. I start to love this guy and all the hardships he had. So I start to get this shift in perceptions about everything. But it began with step four. So what step four calls me to do is to go back through my life. Not an autobiography, because that'll get me in trouble. The self loves that. More narratives. More talking about me. More circumstances. And just talk about it forever and ever and ever. So we're going to get down to cause and conditions. It says, we listed people with whom we were angry. And that was I created a master. I still do that. Make a master list after prayer of people that come to me. You know, when I do a fourth step now, it may not be, most likely not be the same people on my first fourth step. If I've done the work. But sometimes there's things going on that I'm even aware of and I put their name down. One thing I'm clear about is I never want to be the guy on my last fourth step, especially my first one. I never want to be that guy again. That was a sick, banged up, unhealthy young guy. I don't want to go there anymore. Sometimes we hear people say, I wish I was 30 again. I don't want to be 30 again. I don't want to be 40 again. I'm 65. I like it. I don't want to go back. And I went back to my, so listed all these names, and then I went to people, after people, institutions and principals. I don't know what this meant. Institutions. Well, the police department. Oh, I can get angry with them. The IRS, the religious community, the medical community, all these things I was looking at, the IRS, all the stuff I'm writing down. I remember I had one real good one, and I remember the Vietnam War, and I remember what happened to those men and women when they came home, how horribly they were treated, and I was just furious at the government who sent them there, and I can taste that resentment, so I put that down, you know? And they asked me why I was angry. I wrote a second column. One sentence. Why I'm angry at mom, dad, or whatever. The same thing now when I write an inventory. Resentment with who or what institution and why am I angry? Simple. One sentence. Mom, she committed suicide. Mom never got sober. Dad was a gangster. Didn't know how to play sports. Things like that. I was bullied in school, in junior high school. And my freshman year in high school, I was bullied a lot. I was a musician. I was a good one. I got a lot of attention, drew a lot of attention to me, and guys didn't like that. And so I got beat up a lot and bullied a lot. And at that time, I didn't know how to fight. And I had to write about that stuff. And I came through resentments and fears because when I got old, I was afraid all the time. Somebody's going to beat me up if I draw too much attention to myself. And God puts me speaking, so go figure. I don't understand. There was a story I need to share with you. When does this ego show up? You know, is it always with us? Probably. But when does it show up? When do we touch the ego for the first time? Because when that happens, and we're not even aware we're touching, we just know something has just shifted in me. And everything changes. I was around 7 years old, and I was living in Brooklyn. So that's 1966, 67. Where I lived was like the country. It was wonderful. Kids would ride on their bikes till the street lights went on and came home. You'd have to, parents didn't pick you up from school. It was different. And my best friend lived across the street, and he would roll into my driveway in the summertime and just call my name, and it was made, the sun was just coming up. And you could hear him on his bicycle, because he had the baseball cards with clothespins to make kind of like a noise, and he'd roll into the driveway. And he called my name, I'll be right down. We'd be in our pajamas with bedhead, and hair looked like we plugged it into a fan or something. And off we go on our bikes. And we rolled through the neighborhood every morning. It was great, me and my friend Joey. And my mom kind of got hip to what was going on. She'd leave a quarter out. We'd stop at Max's candy store and get some candy and come home. My mom would make breakfast. The age of the innocence was beautiful. A little pool in the backyard. We'd go swimming, and it was a great day. It's how we start our summer mornings. And one day we're in Max's candy store, and Joey's outside with the bike waiting for me to come out. And I had some licorice or something like this and going to my house because mom was going to make us some breakfast. And some older guy was walking in. Older, he was probably like 30 years old. But when you're 7, that guy's almost dead at 30. I mean, you know. And he walked in and he said something like, "Look at these two kids in their pajamas on their bicycles." I don't know the exact words. He probably was amused at these two kids riding around in their pajamas, you know. What I heard was something different. What I heard was, look at these two losers, especially this guy right here named Peter Marinelli. They should have jobs by now. Look what they look like. They're disgusting. Do you ever get like embarrassed where you can feel your face flush and your heart's pounding out of your chest and you're just frozen? Oh my God, I got to get out of here. That's how I felt. I was 7. The next morning when Joey rolled into my driveway, I made up a lie, a conscious lie. I didn't feel good. Next day, my mom doesn't want us doing that. She'll come, let's go swimming. And I learned how to lie to my best friend. From that day forward, I got to tell you, I was at work my very best, never to be shamed again, to look good, look clean, and sound good all the time. Because no one's ever going to embarrass me like that. That guy didn't embarrass me, but that's what I heard. Now, it's one thing to look nice and present nice and speak nice, respectful to people, because that's how we like to be. But when you have to do that, because there's a price if I don't, that's called bondage of self. And I was all in for years. And when I got sober in 1988, and I have basically my brother's clothes on, I'm washing them and trying to press them to present well, because I know someone's going to go, "You look like an idiot. Those must be your brother's clothes." What bondage. I had to write about that stuff. And I had to go to God to get free of me, because no one else was doing it. I get freedom from me in 4 through 9, because self dies and brings life to the spirit. It's always there. It's always alive. I'm just completely dark to it. And we start to touch the power that's always been there. When we're in Alcoholics Anonymous, when I'm in a meeting and someone says something that resonates deeply, I do it, I know you do it. We give that nod, that agreement. You know that thing we do in AA, the AA nod? That's not a conclusion in the mind. That's the soul acknowledging what it always knew. It always knew. It's yes, that's a truth. And I wrote a third column, which was the manifestations of self. It's all self. Pride, personal relationship, self-esteem, security, ambition, pocketbook, sex relations. These things were hurt, interfered, or threatened. Threatened. I'm running or I'm fighting when I feel threatened. But I'm not in the light. Take a look at one person. Maybe 10 resentments, another person, other 10 resentments, and further and further and further away, I walk away from the light. And what this does is remove. The process of recovery is really about removal, never addition. I don't need anything. I just need to be reconnected to God, and that's what this path does. The less me, more God, less me. That's the goal. I got to get out of the way. And rubber hit the road in column 4. And this is the part I didn't want to look at, and most folks don't. They say, "Yeah, but." And that's me. Column 4 is a result of 1, 2, and 3. In fact, column four is really the truth, because a lot of one, two, and three is based on how I heard it and how I saw it, like the guy in the candy store. He probably was thrilled. Look at these two young kids. I wish I can be that age and do that. I didn't hear that. So often I'll look at one, two, and three, looking back on it. It's all based on my perceptions and conceptions, which are all a lie. But column four, that's the truth, because that's what I did. I was selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened. There's my amends, by the way, because my harm call is going to come right out of there. It's that important. Who cares to look itself? 12 and 12 says, who cares to admit complete defeat in step one? Who cares to admit complete defeat right here? It's me. In fact, our book says, I'm going to paraphrase here, that other people did bad things to us. I was molested by someone when I was a kid. That's a terrible thing. The book says, where are you at fault? I close the book. What's this about? What can an 8-year-old kid do to defend himself? So they acknowledge people did terrible things to us. You know, we got caught in a crossfire a few times. Parents, bad step-parents, bad relations, whatever it might be. We were there. What am I going to do about a thing like this? I need to get free. They can do what they want. I need to get free because my life depends upon freedom right now. Freedom from me. I'm free of alcohol. I'm not drinking while I'm doing this. But I need to be free of me and all the head stuff. And so I'm writing this stuff. Where's this going? Another inventory, another fourth column. When is it going to end? Failing to realize as I'm writing, I'm sober. God loves me so much, he's given me stuff that's even painful for me to get free. Because if he didn't love me, he'd say, oh, don't even worry about it. We'll look at it tomorrow. The great thing about step three is when I turn my will and life over to care of God, there's no amen at the end of that third step. There's one at the end of step seven. Because what God's going to do for a drunk like me is, it's a body of work. I make a decision in three, and we're going to go in, and God's going to take me by the hand into that dark, spooky room. We're going to go down in the basement or up in the attic where you don't like to go. He's going to turn on the light and say, I got you. This is the stuff we're going to get rid of. All the spooky stuff. And you know what? As an alcoholic, I say, yeah, but I like that one. Don't get rid of it completely. You know? And he gets rid of it little by slowly. I did a fear inventory. It's interesting, on page 68, it talks about the fear prayer, how we outgrow fear. Yeah? Doesn't it say that? We outgrow fear. Is it possible that at some point in my life we grow into fear? I'm talking about fear when you're a little kid and, you know, you have a nightmare, or a little kid, you're afraid of the dark, and sometimes adults were afraid of the dark. You know, that's not the fear we're talking about. We're talking about living in fear. Operating out of fear. What do people think of me? What are they going to say about me? She likes me. She doesn't like me. He likes me. Doesn't like me. Oh my God, I got to speak. Oh my God, I'm going to die. Everyone's judging me. Failing to realize I'm judging everyone, that they're going to judge me. And it just goes on and on and on and on. That's what they're talking about. When did I grow into that? Because like most of us, when we're little ones, we're running around with our pajamas on, our hair's a mess, we got ice cream all over us, and we don't care, we're as free as a bird. And then something happens. I'm in a candy store, and someone says, look at these two kids. I will never have ice cream on my face or messy hair, and I'm not wearing pajamas. I'm wearing a tuxedo around the house from now on. Yeah. Fear. It touches every aspect of my life. That's why spirituality has to touch every single area of my life, or it touches none of my life. I don't even know. Fear is so sneaky, I don't even know what's happening. I don't even know what's going on. Do you ever sit next to someone, you're talking, as they're talking, you're thinking about what you're going to say back? Why? Because I don't want to be judged. Who's judging? The mind. The self. If I took a breath and just listened, I respond accordingly, or not. Sometimes more is said by being quiet. I forgot God is sitting right next to me and next to them. I forgot that because I'm in self. I'm in fear. I lose the light. I don't know how some cats go and stay sober unless they're not alcoholic and not even touch this work. Because what's waiting for me down the shade a little bit is out of this work is I'm going to have an 8 and 9 list, which I'm going to go back to those many of those folks and repair the damage done out of my effort to live life on self-will. And I'm going to do it as a changed man, part of amends. I'm changed. When they see me, this guy's not the same. They don't look the same. They don't sound. So what's going on with you? I've heard a few people, I had a few people tell me, so what are you doing? They were saying, you don't look like the drunk who ripped me off for $20 or didn't show up for work. Resentment's the number one offender. It doesn't say alcohol. Number one offender, it's self-operating, you know. Nowadays out there, everyone's offended. You ever notice that? I'm offended by that. Boy, what a fourth step they got to write. You know, it's because they're offendable. Everything they're talking about me, you can't say that because, you know what I mean? Get a soul. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease. I've been not only mentally and physically ill, I've been spiritually sick. And this is another spot in the book. It refers to what we lovingly say the threefold illness. I noticed some folks who claim a twofold illness. It doesn't say that in my big book. Why would I have to get spiritually well if I don't have a spiritual malady? Yeah? I got this mind that drives me to do things and a body that responds in kind. Because I'm disconnected, if you will, from this power. And what this book does is reconnect me again. Resentment's the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. And what happens is when I'm in a place of resentment with Joe, that's going to follow me when I'm with Mary or Bill or Frank or the kids. And I'm operating out of that place. I'm operating out of the head. It's the husband who comes home from a hard day's work and had an argument with the boss and takes it on the wife and kids. He's not really angry with them. They're going to get it. Or reliving old things that are unresolved. You're going to get it. Or I'm just going to isolate in a place called self-pity. And I start to isolate from you. I start to isolate from people. I'm in a place called bondage again. And the spring is getting tighter. And I don't even know what's wrong with me. But life is devouring me again. Because I found out in a rude awakening, I cannot master it. And the solution to this is, let's go get drunk. I don't even know why I'm getting drunk. But I know there's relief there. Because I'm not getting any here. When I wrote about that man who was doing god-awful things... You know, I remember when I got sober, and I remember telling my sponsor, if he turned a corner, I'd beat him to death. That's where I was at. And he said, that's your problem now. That's a huge, huge plaque on the soul. What he did was wrong, dead wrong. He said, well, we got to get free of that. And hating only begets more hate. We're not telling you to forgive and have a relationship with him, to forgive and have, send them letters. And we're not talking about that. I thought forgiveness was we're going to hang out now. No, it's I'm going to get unhooked from this thing. I'm going to get hooked from the people who I think wrong me. The people I know wrong, I'm going to get unhooked from that because they're in deep. And I, no matter where I go, they're with me. And I began to pray. When I got to the fourth column, I said to my sponsor, Tony, where am I at fault? He says, how long have you been hating this guy? And that's when I says, if he turned the corner, I'd kill him. He's just put down, you hate him. Move on. Just move on. I did. I hate so-and-so. And we got to a fifth step. He shared very similar things happened to him. And he says, here's your marching orders. And what an order, I can't go through with it. But how free do you want to be? He says, even if you don't mean it, I want you to stop praying for forgiveness. I forgive this guy. I didn't mean it. I didn't mean it at all. I was just saying it because that's what my sponsor told me to do. And then something happened where I was at a meeting one time and sharing this, and I realized it doesn't have claws in me anymore. And what's really remarkable, I've met so many guys over the years, says, can I talk to you? It's happened to me, man. I don't know who to talk to about it. And then I got it. We share our woundedness, and people hook into that. the shared woundedness, the broken, what it was like. I got it. We talk about fear. Me too. I'm not a unicorn. I'm not unique. I'm not different from any of you. When I'm doing a fifth step, I know I'm getting ahead of myself. When I'm doing a fifth step with my sponsor, he says, let me share what happened. Similar with me. Let me share what happened with me. I'm going, oh my God, you too? I thought I was the only one. I was afraid to share. No. If there's a name for it, it's been done. Sex inventory. It says we'd hardly be human if we didn't have problems in the sex department. And I'm not talking about necessarily physical stuff. There are my relationships here. In fact, the book doesn't care about what you do behind closed doors and who you do it with. They're talking about conduct. Who have I hurt and because of my conduct? Made jealousy, aroused jealousy, suspicion, bitterness, things like that, spitefulness, things like that. She's not giving me attention, so I'll go flirt here to get attention. I'll cheat on them. I'm not getting what I want. I'll cause an argument, walk out the door. Or just practicing infidelity my whole life. Whatever it might be, I hurt people. And the thing is, I had to look around the relationship and it says, who did we hurt? Not just her. Maybe her kids. Maybe her parents. Maybe her friends. They all knew me. I stepped on them too. See, it's a domino thing. I hurt one person. There's a lot more people involved in that. Be really selfish to me, well, I just hurt her and that's it. No, that's not true. Again, rubber hit the road. I had to take a look at that. And look at my conduct. Was it selfish or not? I'm an alcoholic who's active. It's selfish. I can't say, well, wasn't that bad, not as bad as him or her. No, it's selfish is selfish. It was dishonest. It was manipulative. I had a buddy of mine said something that I totally identified with. He says, I stayed married for 15 years with a woman I did not like for one reason. If I knew I got divorced, she would meet someone else, and I couldn't deal with that. Alcoholics go, yeah, I get that. I'm going to stay in this really bad relationship because I'm afraid of being alone and meeting someone new or just being alone. So I'll just stay here. That's called bondage. Fear keeps me in there. So I had to take a look at my conduct over the years. And I went back through my life and I listed, people. Some guys have come to me and they have lady after lady after lady after lady after lady after lady, the one night stand thing, and going to places for their personal pleasure. What I tell them to do is just write down nameless, faceless women, done. That's it. If you remember some of the names, great, but nameless, faceless women, it's all the same thing. It's redundant. And what it is self acting out again because self doesn't want to be alone. I'm not okay alone. I need somebody. I had a bad day. Mary just broke up with me. I will jump in bed with Donna. I'm not being alone tonight. That's a problem. It's all fear, sex, conduct. I really don't care about her. I just don't want to be alone. A lot of you guys are on the edge of your seats. I must be speaking truth, man. Holy smokes. And I come into AA and we say, I am going to find someone and fall in love. No, you're really not going to do this good. Don't do that. Speaking about relationships, listen, I'm guilty of all of this. I look around, I see people dating and having fun, and when is mine? Maybe it's my time. God loves me so much to keep people out of my life for a little while, those intimate relationships, so I can be with him. He doesn't want anybody in your life. Just talk to me. Let's us get it going together. And then when we're good cemented, I will put somebody in your path. May not even be your type, but it'll be a heartfelt connection. I don't know any of this if I'm not doing 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. If nothing changes, nothing changes. If I always do what I always did, I'm always going to get what I always got. So step four, I got to wrap up here. I skipped a lot in this book. We could do a whole week on step four and five. But it was revealing many times, and sometimes it was just doing a fourth step. I did a fifth step. It was, whoa. And other times it was just a fifth step. My first nine step, my first eight step list was from here to Timbuktu. My eight step list, it's like, I got to call up Joe and tell him I'm sorry I didn't go see him speak. It's nothing. Don Pritz told me that's going to happen, which means you're getting better. That I'm in this deal for a long time and I still have an eight step list a mile long. Something's wrong. I'm still harming people. So the proof is on paper. Get to walk different. There's a shift that happens. It'll happen for all of us, if I can be so bold to say that. At the beginning, seeing is believing, and it becomes believing is seeing. That's what happens when operating out of the soul. I am out of time. That's all I got. Peace.
All right, let's all thank Peter one more time. And then we're going to have Ryan come up and do our second.
Hi, I'm Ryan. I'm your recovered alcoholic secretary. Hey. In keeping with the seventh tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going around. We also have QR codes on the back of the chairs if you'd rather give that way through Venmo. It's also available to do on Zoom. As the baskets are going around, I've asked Eddie, one of our Ohio friends, to read the recovered statement. We read this notice to explain why many people in AA identify as recovered rather than recovering and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic. Let's welcome up Eddie.
Hi, I'm Eddie, recovered alcoholic. Recovered. We are not cured of alcoholism. Recovered, but not cured. That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime. But we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than his body. Page 23. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered.
Thank you, Eddie. 1940-style big book sponsorship from the foreword to the second edition of Alcoholics Anonymous. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sober at once and remained that way, 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, come to believe, and experienced is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back into his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75%+ success rate. Does anybody need a sponsor? If you could raise your hand. No? All right. If you're too shy, just come stand up here and someone will talk to you after the meeting. Can the recovered alcoholics raise your hand? Awesome. If your hand's not raised, just talk to someone whose hand is up. And we have some screen announcements. So Broward County Intergroup is where you can buy AA-related literature and medallions. Intergroup is also responsible for creating our where and when and scheduling the AA hotline. Stop by and visit them. Broward County Institutions Committee is responsible for bringing meetings into places where people like us can't get to an AA meeting, such as jails, detoxes, and rehabs. They meet monthly to organize the meeting schedule at the 12-step house. Is anybody here a part of BCIC? Raise your hand. Awesome. If you want any information on that, see any of those people. The gratitude dinner, their next planning meeting is going to be this Saturday at 1 p.m. at the Fourth Dimension Club. If you want to go to the gratitude dinner, you have to sign up to do something for the gratitude dinner. And Monday night, we have our big book study. Same building, third floor. It starts at 7:15. Fellowship starts at 6:30. So come check that out. And then we have Peter all the way up until September 12th, so we've got a couple more weeks of Peter left. So definitely come see that. That's that. All right. We have CDs, mugs, large print big books, little red books, and big book dictionaries for sale on the table in the back. If you're interested in any of that, just see a home group member. We meet every Thursday starting promptly at 7:15, and we ask that you be courteous and ready to begin at the sound of the bells. Thanks. See you next week. Thank you.
tonight's session and all the past speaker podcasts at alcoholicsandgod.org. I'd like to invite everyone to our Monday night Big Book study. And those who wish to thank this tonight's speaker, please line up in the center aisle. And let's do the Lord's Prayer in our seats. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name.
Stronger man. zan, zan, zan. Oh, when you're smiling, when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you, baby, baby. Yes, when you're laughing, when you're laughing, yes, the sun comes shining through. But when you're crying, you bring on the rain. So stop your sighing, baby, and be happy again. Yes, and keep on smiling. Keep on smiling, baby. And I hope
shine, let it shine, 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 let it shine. Out in the dark, I'm gonna let it shine. Out in the dark, I'm gonna let it shine. Out in the dark.
Michael Chase, here's that song you've been asking me for a million years. I finally pulled it out the corners of my mind, and here you go. Song is. God bless. I love you, Mike Chase. Bye.
I think you know this one, don't you? Shine a light on me tonight. his feet as far as the road. I work these hands right down to the bone. I work these hands right down to the bone. I've worked so hard for someone I don't know. I watch these walls be bought and sold, so low. Just wanna set me free. Clap your hands if you believe me, tell.